This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In 1969, David Crosby of the Byrds, Stephen Stills of the Buffalo Springfield, and Graham Nash of the Hollies formed a new group. Their signature was their close harmonies. David Crosby and Graham Nash are my guests today.
Helplessly hoping her harlequin hovers nearby, awaiting a word. Gasping at glimpses of gentle true spirit, he runs, wishing he could fly, I only to trip at the sound of goodbye.
Crosby, Stills, and Nash, sometimes joined by Neil Young, were one of the most popular groups of the late 60s and early 70s. Crosby, Stills, and Nash have performed together on and off for the past 21 years, and each member has recorded solo albums. They have a new album called Live It Up, and they're on a four-month-long concert tour. Crosby was addicted to drugs during much of the 70s and 80s. He kicked cold turkey in 1985 in a Texas prison. I asked him if this tour feels different from other tours because he's straight now.
It's getting to be like my normal state now. I don't even really... I don't even feel so surprised by it anymore. You know, for a long time, it was such an incredible new feeling.
Yeah.
You know, that, yeah, things were very different. But it's getting to be how I normally approach things now, and I'm getting comfortable with it. And I do think I do a lot better work since I straightened up. I think I got a lot more sensitivity to what I'm doing and to my partners and to the audience, and I know I'm singing better.
And it's certainly a large change from my perspective. Now this aeroplane flies on three engines instead of only two.
Were there things that you felt you had to like cover up or make up for when David was having drug problems?
It's not a question of covering up. It's a question of rebalancing.
Yeah.
You have to work harder because one of you is not quite there. You have to structure songs so that there's not too many of David's in a row. But all that's over with and it's water under the bridge.
I want to ask you about the harmonies that you do. I think, like, voices, as you get older, your voice change tends to deepen a little bit. Has
yes.
that affected, like, where you each sing in the harmonies now or the way you lay out the harmonies?
Not so much how we lay them out. You know, we might not be, you know, by a couple of notes, we might not be quite as ambitious as we were. But Graham has somehow magically retained his ability to sing stratospherically high. And he does so consistently. So the top end of our sound has remained pretty much the same. I've lost a couple of notes with age, but not too many. And I usually sing the middle part, so it's not really a problem. And Stephen, although he has a falsetto where he can go up pretty high, usually sings the lower part. And we haven't had to compromise much.
If you're just joining us, my guests are David Crosby and Graham Nash, and Crosby, Stills, and Nash have a new record, and the new album is called Live It Up. Let me play something from the new record. And Graham, I want to play one of your songs. This is House of Broken Dreams.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you think of this as a kind of follow-up to Our House.
I didn't until somebody pointed out that it could be the antithesis of that song.
Yeah.
And when I began to look at it from that point of view, I kind of agree with them. It, you know, Our House has a very rosy future, and House of Broken Dreams has a very dusty end.
Let's listen to it.
Living in a house of broken dreams, where shadows throw shadows on the wall. And memories are mountains to climb, knowing everyone can fall. And here where the cobwebs count the hours, since we let the laughter clear the air, painfully trying to touch, knowing feelings tearing us apart. In
House of Broken Dreams, written by Graham Nash from the new Crosby, Stills, and Nash album called Live It Up. The new record is on Atlantic?
Always.
Yeah, well, I had read somewhere, you could tell me this is true, that if this is true, that you're still fulfilling the initial contract to Atlantic Records because you never made as many records as it stipulated in the contract.
We'll probably be fulfilling the initial contract to Atlantic sometime in the year 2000.
And the reason why we are with Atlantic is that we have tremendous loyalty to Ahmet Erdogan and Doug Morris. Ahmet has been the man that we signed with in 1969 for six records, which we still have not completed yet. We believe that Ahmet Erdogan is one of the true music people within the music business, a business that has been overrun by lawyers.
But so you still are fulfilling that initial contract in a way.
Well,
right?
Actually, we've rewritten that contract several times since then. So not in technical fact, no, we're not. But in, you know, in a certain sense, yes, we are, and we will probably continue to be. We really, Ahmet's a friend.
Yeah.
He's not, you know, somebody that normally my you know, relationship with record companies would be as an adversary, you know, but Ahmet's a friend.
Is that one of the things that keeps the group together, or is it far beyond that?
It's only one very simple thing that keeps this band together, and that's music. I think that if we didn't make music together, I probably wouldn't speak to Stephen. I would speak to David. He lives 20 seconds away from me. We have breakfast most mornings and hang out. Stephen lives miles away from me. And if we didn't make music, I probably would not maintain my relationship with Stephen. I love him dearly. I love to make music with him. But he can be difficult.
Well, I get the feeling in your own ways, maybe you're all difficult or something. I mean,
I'm sure we are. I'm sure, you know, if you were to ask Stephen, he would probably respond in kind. But what we have learned to do over the years is to be more cognizant of each other's feelings, more compassionate, more cognizant of our weaknesses and our strengths.
David Crosby, I want to play one of the songs that you wrote for the new album, Live It Up. Would you rather hear Arrows or Yours and Mine? I'm going to leave this one up to you.
Oh, what a terrible choice. I love Arrows because Michael Hedges, and you know who Michael Hedges is, right? He's a wonderful talent, wrote it together. But if I have to choose between the two, let's do Yours and Mine because I think it's about something really important.
You want to say anything about writing it?
I'll tell you how it happened. It was a very good example of helping a song grow. You saw Time magazine a couple of weeks ago, right?
The kid. What was the cover?
The kid with the automatic rifle. 14-year-old boy on the cover with a Colt Armalite rifle. I've seen pictures like that before, and somehow that stuck in my mind as just, you know, a perfect example of wrong. You know, I know that we did something wrong in this world when that kid is standing there with that rifle, you know, and kids younger than that are dying every day in Beirut and in Belfast and even in L.A.
Well, let's hear it.
I can see a boy of 14. He's got a rifle in his hand. He's dying to defend his desert land. He's got an arm around his father, another arm around his gun. Must a child and father die so young? There's a teenage girl in Belfast playing in the street. Her brother plays a different game, and he's turning up the heat on the soldiers around the corner and the powers overseas. And who are they to ruin lives like these? Cause they're yours and they're mine. They're yours.
That's Yours and Mine, written by David Crosby from the new Crosby, Stills, and Nash record, Live It Up. I'd really love to hear the story about how the two of you first met. Is there such a story?
Yes, there is, yeah.
Can you tell it?
The Hollies were in Los Angeles in 1967, maybe even late 66. And I had, on a previous visit, met a woman who drastically changed my life. Her name was Cass Elliott. She was the lead singer with Mamas and the Papas. And on my next visit to LA, when I was staying at the Knickerbocker, she called me up one day. She said, "I want to take you somewhere. Be downstairs in the lobby 5 minutes," which is where the cast used to operate the world, you know. Be here. So I was down in the lobby, and she rode up in this red convertible Porsche and proceeded to drive me up Laurel Canyon. And windy, and we end up at this house that also has a dark green Porsche. Was it convertible, David?
No.
A dark green Porsche in the garage. Led me up the stairs, and I see this man who is lying on a settee with a tray of dope on his chest.
Well, let's be specific now. It was a tray of...
Marijuana,
at the time.
Yeah, that's what we called dope then, in those days. Rolling the most immaculate joints that I've ever seen. That could very well have easily gone into a packet and been sold as, you know, consumer level stuff. And that kind of amazed me because I'd never seen anybody quite do this whilst answering the phone, whilst watching the TV and reading a book at the same time.
Eating too, probably.
Yes, probably. We got on famously. David did not know who I was. But
Cass the Rat didn't tell me who he was.
Was that intentional?
Yeah, sure. She loved to do things like that. She didn't tell me who he was. I really liked this guy, you know, that she brought over. He was totally mystified about who he was. I hadn't the vaguest clue. And then after he was gone, you know, later on, I said, "Well, who was that guy?" And she said, "You ever hear King Midas in reverse?" And I said, "You're kidding," you know. I'm a harmony singer freak. You know, I love harmony singers. You know, I love the Everly Brothers. I love people that can sing great harmony. And the minute you hear a Holly's record, you know, that's what you notice is this fantastic high harmony. And so she told me, I beat her about the head and shoulders for a while and said, "I want to see him again."
And that's how David and I met.
So how did you decide to actually perform together?
Well, we were friends before we ever got involved in music on that level. We both, of course, knew each other musically, and I was a great fan of his stuff on the Byrds albums. And one day the Byrds were touring England, and David was in London, and I had his number, and he was staying at a hotel that was, strangely enough, called the White House. And I said, "Hey, you don't want to be at the White House. Blue-haired ladies, old people, cigars.
Pit.
Come over and stay with me." So he came over to stay with me at my, I had a Muse apartment in London. And then we started to talk music, you know, and he left me with a tape of a very early demo of a song he'd written called Guinevere, and a song he'd written called Deja Vu, and a song he'd written called Wooden Ships. I believe Long Time Gone was on there also. And so, it amazed me that these songs had not been recorded yet, because... you know, in hindsight, they were brilliant songs. From the very first musical inklings of this man, of this mass complex man that Crosby is, I began to realize that I would like to make music with this man, that he wrote and thought very differently than me. And yet there was something that bound us together, either our sense of humor or our sense of the ridiculous or our sense of rebellion. There was something that linked David and I together from the very beginning. And it remains to this day.
Were there things you wanted to each do that you couldn't do with the bands that you were with, that Graham Nash you couldn't do with the Hollies?
Obviously.
That David Crosby you couldn't do with the Byrds?
Yeah. I'm not as sure now as I was then that I was being held back by the situation I was in, but I was certainly stuck in a role. I was, you know, the rhythm guitar player, harmony singer. And it was tough for me to be recognized as a singer-songwriter in my own right in that band and in that role. And I know that it was even more so for Graham. Graham was writing songs that absolutely stunned me. They were so good. And his band wanted to do an album of Dylan songs. And
Which is not necessarily bad, but they wanted to do it Las Vegas style.
Well, no, I really think actually the Hollies doing Dylan is like... really inappropriate
I'm
choice.
I'm trying to be kind.
I'm trying to be kind, too.
but the Hollies has great records. I mean, like, I'm sorry.
They make great records, yeah. But a Dylan song is not the thing
for them to
be doing. Not at all. Not even close. Not in the ballpark. And they had great songs, his songs. So I know that he was, you know, frustrated, too. And then my relationship with the Byrds came to, a feisty end between me and them, and they threw me out. And I started hanging around with Steven. And then we, lucked into, singing together. And the minute you sing together and hear that sound, you know you want to do that, obviously.
Now, I want to get back, Graham Nash, to your work with the Hollies. Now, you were writing, what I think was like great songs like Stop, Stop, Stop and Carrie Ann. I mean, did you feel like that was a kind of pop that you didn't want to do anymore?
It became so after a while. You know, we were trained to write, I don't think we ever wrote anything over 2 minutes and 50 seconds long.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Tin Pan Alley kind of training that we went through in the late 50s, early 60s. And that's what I was kind of stuck in. But then having met David and Steven and expanded my awareness, not only on a personal level, but on by smoking huge, copious amounts of marijuana, I began to change the way I felt about what was important in music. And I began to realize that the three-minute pop song, although it has its value, was not truly, truly important on a deep level. And so I began to write songs that I personally thought that were better songs than just three-minute pop songs. And the Hollies were not interested in those songs. And so I began to question myself. I thought that it was me that was at fault, that I was wrong, that, because there were four of them and only one of me. It was Crosby that saved my musical life by saying, wait a second, if you're crazy, then I'm just as crazy. And maybe we should stick together here.
Were the other people in the Hollies, were the other musicians, like, not getting high when you had started getting high?
Not at all.
Did that?
They were drinkers.
So that kind of represented a shift in sensibility for you?
Very
and
much so. The gap widened as we were looking at the situation. It was just getting wider and wider and wider. And then when Cass turned me onto LSD, it got even wider. And so at a certain point, I just couldn't relate,
So you quit the group?
Yeah.
Was there hostility when you quit? I mean,
great deal of it. There's still hostility to this man to this day, and I'm pointing at David.
I came over to England and said, psst, "Hey, psst, come with me," and they saw me do it. I don't think they'll ever forget
me. I remember
the
moment of the last Hollies concert at the London Palladium, which was a benefit for Princess Margaret's Save the Children Fund. And David came to visit us. And he came resplendent in a brown, beautiful three-piece Victorian suit, his velvet hat, and a silver-tipped cane.
Were there differences in how you approached the music business? David Crosby coming from America, Graham Nash coming from England. I mean, there's some differences.
We did have some differences about how we related to the music business when we originally got together. I had already gotten to a place where, for my way of thinking, the music business and the music press and all were adversaries. But I had been watching Dylan. See, I used to go and go to press conferences with Bob Dylan and watch him, play verbal ping pong with these people. And so then when I came to England, I had this enormous amount of irreverence, for it. And I think Graham liked that.
I did.
He was really tired of having
to understand. David came to one of the Hollies press conferences in London. And the Hollies, because we were, controlled by the forces that made pop groups, and we wanted to be famous and all that stuff, people would say, okay, all stand on your heads now. Okay, click, click, click. Good. Okay, now take this orange in your hand and juggle with it. Fine. Click, 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 click. We went to a press conference and somebody asked me a question and Crosby stood in the way and he said, screw off. We're not answering that question, are we, Graham? Now, this shocked me because we'd been used to treating the press like gods. And here is someone who treated them like dogs, which is almost spelt the same way, but not quite,
So,
it was amazing.
So did that become a habit of yours afterwards?
No, I still have more patience with people in the press. David still is irreverent.
I'd love for you to each update your stories for us now, to tell us where you live approximately, not the address or anything, and if you're married, if
All
you
right.
have kids.
All right, let me start. I've been married to the same woman for 15 years.
Long
I married
time?
Her twice.
What, really?
We have, only because I remarried, not because I divorced and married again.
Oh, it was like one of these renewal
yes,
things?
Yes, yeah. On the same day that David and Jan got married. Susan and I redid our vows. I have 3 children, Jackson, Willie, John, and Niall, 12, 10, and 8, respectively. I spend my time between Los Angeles and Hawaii, and I have a million things that I'm doing.
David Crosby, can you update your story for us?
Sure. Let's see. I also am married. I've been married, what, about 3 years now?
To someone you've been with
for
a very long time.
To somebody that I've been with for 13 years, Jan. And very happy.
One of the sweetest people I know.
Yeah, she is a gem. And we live about 50 yards from Graham and Susan. And our lives have gone through such a traumatic scene in the last, 12 years or so. Having, managed to, kick drugs and get straight, we're like a pair of kids, we wander around and everything is fun for us. Every day that we're alive is like Christmas.
David Crosby and Graham Nash. Crosby, Stills, and Nash have a new record called Live It Up. They're currently on a 4-month tour that will take them to more than 70 cities, including Philadelphia, Boston, Chicago, Denver, and Los Angeles. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.